Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Richard, thank you for joining. I appreciate you a lot for coming on. I was trying to think of ways to kick this off, but I think we should just start with a very obvious question because I don't think too many people understand or know anything about the world of wallpaper. So what is one thing about your world that people have no idea about, that people have no clue when it comes to wallpaper, designing, building a business around it? I guess like the biggest misconception in your industry.
That's a really good question to start with. I guess it depends on where you're angling that from. If you're an American talking to an American or an Australian talking to an Australian that makes wallpaper. Because in Australia, I used to tell people in Australia what I did for a living and they'd be like, wallpaper, is that a thing? They remember their parents' bedroom and that was it. They never want to see it again. So to an Australian, they just forgot wallpaper even existed as a product. So they don't know too much about the industry.
But wait, just a second. Like, seriously? Like, what year was this?
So Australians have really, pushed the wallpaper out the door. And it hasn't been a thing for quite a while. Now, I remember it as a kid. It was everywhere. But, now we're still working on wallpaper to make a comeback, really. Where in the US, it's different. It's wallpaper's always been a thing, especially in a commercial environment. But now it's coming back in full force into a residential. But I guess you sort of don't think about it. It's a bit like paint. Like, you look at it on a wall, but you just don't compute. It's just one of those things. So as wallpaper, as an industry, no one really looked at who designs wallpaper. How do they come up with this concept and how do they produce it? All those type of things. Like, no one, if you're not in the design world, you wouldn't even know what a roll of wallpaper costs. Like, how much is wallpaper? So, yeah, it's just one of those things where you get sort of sucked in. It becomes your world, but if you're not, it's completely irrelevant.
Well, okay, so you're right, because most people do not buy multiple homes. They probably buy one home, which is the most important purchase of their life, at least at a young age. if they can. We're just talking about how unaffordable homes are, but that's besides the point. And it's not like they're going to redecorate it every single year. So they're going to make some key choices about aesthetics, decoration, wallpaper, paint, whatever, when they move in or closely after. But I am curious, because now I have a follow-up question to that. Because wallpaper was not a thing in Australia, and I didn't even know that about 5 minutes ago. So what makes somebody from Australia want to start a wallpaper business when wallpaper is really not prevalent in Australia?
Well, we were naive. We were naive. And we didn't know that because we hadn't been in the industry. So we had a printing business. We were doing canvas prints, things like that. And someone said, can you guys print wallpaper? And we said, right, well, let's have a go. And we did. We managed to print a product that looked like wallpaper, the first sort of evolution of what we were doing, and we just got intrigued as to whether or not we could see it through, whether or not we could actually get that product right. And then as you're learning that, you're realizing what makes up the market, and especially the market in Australia. But yeah, it was a really, like, anyone with any insight into it or even business insight would have said this is a crazy idea. But we were young, we were looking for something to do, and just a bit, very, very naive.
But, you know, like, sometimes that's what you need to, you have to be naive to take some of these chances.
Oh, yeah. If you'd thought about it, you would never do it.
Now, I am curious, because you grew up in rural Australia. You were the child of, I guess, farmers, correct? Walk me through your upbringing. Was farming something that sort of unlocked this entrepreneurial bug in you because your parents weren't, quote unquote, working in a job? Probably gave you a lot of It probably gave you access to what hard work looked like, which was probably useful as well. But maybe just walk me through your experience as a kid, what that imprinted on you, maybe as you grew up.
Well, so I grew up in a very regional part of northwest New South Wales, and it was all broadacre farming and sheep. So and Dad was a farmer, but we would have he was fifth generation Australian farmer. Like it wasn't just instilled in Mum and Dad; it was headed going all the way back. So yeah, we grew up with this get out and work hard kind of mentality. And there was three boys, so and you know I was the middle son, and we were really sort of kicked outside all the time and go and see what your dad's doing, and Dad was either you know trying to fix something or find a solution to something, and just generally out there doing something for himself. So I guess it does. Like Mum was working; she had a job in town. She was actually teaching fashion at one of the local college. So she used to go off to work, but Dad obviously worked on the farm. So yeah, it does. It just instills this work hard kind of figure it out. If you don't know how to fix it, figure out how to fix it. Because no one else is going to come along and do it for you. So yeah, it was that's kind of that was really instilled this. And that's really obvious why when Bryce and I started in business together and we get into wallpaper, it's like, how do you do it? So we just spent essentially years figuring out how to get our product right and our production right. And when we started, technology wasn't even helping us. Like there wasn't a, oh, you need this printer and this type of paper. It was, we had this printer. The printer we use now didn't even exist. The ink type didn't exist. So it was really, it was one of those, all right, what are we going to do? Like I used to, we had a water-based printer and we're trying to produce a product that's waterproof. Here we'd print it and then I'd be spraying it in the shed. I'd have my mask on and we were in the garage at home and I'm spraying it to lock the ink in so the ink wouldn't run when you went to install it. So and it was just it was one thing after another. But eventually we got there. But it was that I guess we're just ingrained to make like it was just this, it's not gonna work. Didn't really I'd say it's not gonna work. And Bryce would say, of course it is. So or
So,
the other way around.
Bryce is your older brother, younger brother,
Younger
which
brother.
younger brother? Okay, so the older brother never got involved in wallpaper. He
No,
he's
he's in agriculture.
okay. He's doing his own
So,
thing. So
yeah.
did he actually continue farming to a degree?
No, he went off and did other things and then ended up
Ah,
back in ag. Yeah.
okay. I no, I'm curious why even fifth generation you chose to never
Well,
go
no,
into farming.
Mum and Dad sold the farm,
Okay,
and then moved to town. We finished our education and we went off and
but
well,
Bryce,
yeah.
well, so Bryce, what? So you went to school for accounting, and you were planning on, I'm assuming, being some sort of CPA or something. Bryce was what, creative graphic designer?
Yeah, so Bryce had finished school and I, at that stage I'd finished school a couple of years before him. And I was working for a company out in the middle of nowhere driving tractors. And so I said, right, Bryce, you don't know what you're going to do. Come and hang with me for a while. So it didn't take him very long to realize that sitting on a tractor was no fun. So he went off to art school and did a diploma or something in advanced communications, which is graphic design essentially. And then he got into that. Worked in London for a few years and just doing graphic design stuff. And then when he came home, I also got sick of sitting on a tractor. And I then after a few years went and studied accounting. And I deferred a business degree and then went traveling and then didn't get back to business. So but I had this sales background and I'd had you know the touch on accounting. And Bryce had come home from Australia, from he'd been living in Spain for a few years, and he decided that he was going to get into advertising. And I thought he's not going to be able to do that by himself. So I was kind of at a bit of a loss, I guess. Didn't really know what I wanted to do, so I thought, well, I'll just team up with him and let's see what happens. And that's kind of the start of it. And that was in 2008, and we didn't really start producing wallpaper until 2009, 2010. Sort of
So you,
stuck around with a bit of advertising and stuff first.
well, I was gonna say, so you just realized, like, as you're starting to work with Bryce, you're realizing, listen, like, this is a skill set that he has. Let's just find a commercial application for it.
Yeah.
No idea how to do it. We're just going to figure it out. Okay, so in all seriousness, like the first version of that, like when you start a wallpaper company, what are you buying a roll of blank paper and Bryce is like doodling on it? And then you're trying to find somebody who's going to put it up on their wall? Like walk me through how you actually get this first customer.
All right, so I had a friend.
I know I old massively oversimplified, by the way.
No. But let's get down to it. Like I had a mate who was in retail. He was selling paint and things like that. He's like, can you design wallpaper? Because we were designing canvas prints. We bought this wide format printer and we were designing canvas prints, whether they be photographs, not a lot of photographs, more sort of vector sort of stuff. And it was all about pitching to interior designers that just really needed wall fillers and some bright colors and something that wasn't just, you know, your standard sort of stock stuff. So we were kind of coming up with this collection of stuff and we thought, and then Bryce designed this typical designer. He designs a brochure and he put a wall mural in there and said, it looks really good in the brochure. Now, all the same, we can't make it. Oh, we'll figure it out. That was his response. So everybody wanted the mural. They were like, how do we get the wall mural? So I was like, I've got no idea how we're going to produce this. But I sourced some paper that was kind of being used for internal graphics, like in shop fit outs and things like that. And then we used the printer that we had, which was this old water-based printer. And then I sprayed it all. But we were doing it in panels, which we hadn't really done before. So we're trying to figure out how to get the colors to match as the panels go across and the length right. And it was just a bit of a nightmare. But the first job we got was at the Noosa Surf Club, which was, now if any of your listeners have ever been to Noosa, it's this beautiful park in Queensland. It's this little beach sort of, it used to be more of a beach sort of village. Now it's getting pretty busy. But there's a surf club there right on the point, which is just a great spot to go and spend an afternoon. And we got this mural put in right downstairs. And we printed it. It looked pretty good. And we had this friend who was around the corner who was a paper hanger. And here's this old guy, and he kept dropping in to see what we were up to. More out of just, what are the boys doing now? Anyway, he installed it for us. And there was errors all through it. There was wrong lengths and all sorts of stuff. But he made it look pretty good, and we got paid for it. So that was like, right, we're away. This concept
got business.
It's a business. It cost us a lot more than we produced in the first year, but we were just trying to figure out, like, people were buying it. It was a pretty crappy product. It was overpriced, and people were still willing to pay for it. So that kind of just got us going.
Do you have an idea of why that is?
Oh, because it was something new. It was something that they just hadn't seen before. And we put these designs together. So to answer your question, how did we get into it? We sort of started with some custom murals. And we were filling that sort of, oh, I need this for this kind of project. We're filling that hole. And then we're like, right, we need to do some collections. Like, how do we do that? So Bryce started designing all these kind of vectory kind of designs. Because he's not an artist, he's just a graphic designer. So he's putting all this together, and we had this first original collection, and we had another collection, and they were sort of starting to sell, but it really was quite obvious that it was being designed by a guy that had no experience in the interiors market. So that's where we started to get other artists involved, and we were getting a bit of different stuff in. So
I love it.
But it was working, and it still wasn't commercially viable, but we had the initial concept. Like, we had some art. We had some wallpaper and people were interested.
So you didn't do the stereotypical entrepreneur stuff where you're looking at the TAM of a market and you're figuring out the MVP. No, you're just like, but you're burning money at this point. You have to be burning money.
Yeah. We didn't have any money. And like, I mean any. When Bryce and I joined forces, we had like a couple hundred bucks and we had rent due. And I'm like, how are we going to do this? And so I rang an uncle who I'd worked for in the past, and he was like, all right, well, I'll give you $7,000 to see what happens. Like, I'm just intrigued to see what you two come up with. So he gave us the money, and that was it. It was like, right, okay, we're kind of in business, you know, let's start. And that was how we started the advertising, and then we actually went back to him for another loan when we sort of got into the wallpaper side. But Yeah, we won't make any money. We'll make a bit of money out of the canvas prints that we were still doing. And then we got to a certain point and we said, there's a future in the wallpaper. Let's just scan everything else and just concentrate on. But yeah, it wasn't.
How long did you sort of like flail through this period of trying to figure it out, working off your uncle's $7,000? You were, I mean, you're, I feel like even the way that you're creating wallpaper at this point is not the industry standard. So
No,
how long did
so
this, yeah.
definitely not the industry standard. No, it took us a while. So we had this printer, we had this paper, and I committed to, I sort of grabbed this paper that was available because there was nothing available in Australia at the time. No one was printing wallpaper in Australia. Well, there was a couple of guys screen printing, but they weren't going to give me too much information about where they got their paper and things like that. So I had this paper that was coming in through a distributor for wide format printing products and things like that. So it was super expensive. We were paying more for white paper than people were retailing wallpaper for. So we were so far
Yeah, sure.
behind. But we were doing a lot of the custom murals and things like that, which we had decent margin in because people needed a solution. So it might be a shop fit out or something like that. So we do a mural and we might get a couple thousand bucks for the mural. But and it wasn't that much product. So we were kind of making money there while we tried to figure out how to scale it. Like you can't scale custom murals doing one wall at a time. You've got to figure out how to get a collection out there and just push it globally. And rather than like we wanted to be able to design a collection, throw it up, and then produce everything on demand. That was our concept from day one. But it took a while for the, to get us to that point. So I spent like it seems like months, but I was looking at all of the mass-produced stuff that came out of Europe. I'm like, all right, well, where do they get their paper from, and how do they do it? And I had no experience in the printing industry, so I didn't even know what type of printers they were using. So, and there's no book that says how to print wallpaper. Like it just took me ages to figure it out because I was completely green to the whole thing.
How did you
I
figure it
eventually.
out? How did you figure it out?
Well, I eventually found a mill in Germany that was providing paper to the wall coverings industry, or non-woven. It was right on that edge of going from old school paper to becoming a non-woven product, which is what they sell now. So it's got cellulose fibers in the paper so that it actually sticks together. It's just a modern take on the wallpaper, but it comes off in sheets and it's a lot easier to cut. So that was just coming in. And I found this mill in Germany that would sell us some. And I didn't tell them how we were printing it. I didn't say it was going to be printed with a digital printer or anything in the system. So I got some samples out. And meanwhile, every time you requested a sample, like it probably took a couple of months before we got the paper and we actually be able to test it. So we had this paper that we got. We printed on it. I think we had a new printer at that stage. And we had it hang on the clothesline for like, I don't know, months to see what it would do in the sunlight, in the rain. Like, was the ink going to stick to the paper?
This is an
Anyway,
excruciatingly
yeah.
patient business.
We were very patient. Anyway, and then yeah, this wasn't a fast, I'm going to be rich tomorrow kind of concept. Like that
Yeah, I
was
can see that.
we're still trying to figure out how to make the product. Anyway, we got this paperwork, so we pretty much put all our money into buying a few reels of this paper. So we ended up with, I don't know, 15,000-20,000 meters of this paper. And we thought, right, we import it into Australia. That's another 3 months later, and then we've rewound it into rolls that have fit on our printer, and we started printing wallpaper. That was kind of the concept behind it. We had a small digital printer, and then from there we just right, how do we get a faster printer? How do we get it more efficient? And then we changed papers. But the concept was working at this stage. We were designing wallpaper, we were marketing it, and we could actually produce it and get it to people. But
And this is, you're still in, are you still in Australia at this point?
yeah. And we've only been here for 2 years.
In the US, you've only been here for 2 years out of this whole history? Okay, I didn't realize you were that recent in the US. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so as you're scaling this out, it starts to work, then it turns into a little bit of a business. Then you're starting to apply, like, listen, we have some systems and processes. Now we're starting to make some money. Now we're, you know, finding better equipment. What is the outside of figuring out the basics of the business, which already seem to be excruciatingly painful to figure out, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you made when you first started out in terms of, now it's working, but then I screwed this up, or I hired this person that didn't work out, or I don't know.
Well, to be honest, we didn't have any big stuff ups because we didn't have big budgets. Like, we didn't have any money. And I look at it now and I think, if someone had given me a chunk of cash back then, I'd be telling you a story about how I blew all the money on some dumb idea. But because it was happening so slowly, like, we had time to actually go through it. We'd think about it, and then we'd come up with a concept, and then we'd think about it. And as time went along, we went, that's a crazy idea. There's one concept that we did, and it probably almost 10 years ago. We had these collections and we were selling through the Australian wholesale market. So we were selling through the few wallpaper shops that actually exist in Australia. And we're trying to figure out how we can compete with all the imported stuff, which is quite cheap, really. Even to be shipped from Europe into Australia, it's still, you know, fairly competitive. So we're looking at it, right, how are we going to do this? And we thought, well, what if we come up with custom swatch books where the shop can choose which designs out of our collection they actually like? Because rather than giving them a book that costs us a fortune to make, takes a heap of paper, heaps of time, and at that stage, like, we weren't good at making books. They were costing us a fortune to make just a swatch book, a wallpaper swatch book. So I said, all right, let's do that. Let's do a custom book. And I got this guy to create this, or build this site to do it. And it took months for this to happen. And eventually we sort of got to the end, and this guy hands over this website. And I said, that is ridiculous. I'm not launching that to anybody. And we never launched it. So the concept was there. I paid the guy because he'd done the work, but he hadn't really delivered a decent product. So we sort of came to an agreement at the end and said, right, well, this is where it stops. But it's funny because we're coming back to that now. It's literally about to go live on our website in a couple of weeks. We're going to have custom swatch books for our US wholesale market where they can go in and they can choose from our 2,000 designs and go, I want that design, that design, that design. They're the designs I'm going to resell in my store to my clients. So it's funny, like, whilst we wasted the money 10 years ago, we've actually come back to it. Now the business is in a point where it's actually going to work. So that's...
But you know, all those mess ups, like, you hear this quite often, like, if you learn from the mistakes, then they're not, you know, they're not wasted, right? Like, now you have all the learnings compounded over how many years. And I actually, like, I really have to just highlight something. And we were just, again, very briefly before we turned on the camera, we were just speaking about how important it is to be patient. And obviously, if people are listening, like, none of this moved quickly. I think that you, as an entrepreneur, I think you're actually a very rare breed in terms of how you think through problem solving and the time horizon that you're committing to solve these problems. And I think that's why you're successful, because I think a lot of people try and get something done in 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, it doesn't work. Okay, I'm going to give up. But you were you commit to this for your life, and you're like, I'll figure it out.
But we were very fortunate too. We were, we had a few big advantages. We were outside of the industry. So we weren't, like, no one knew what we were doing. We were way down in Australia trying to figure out how to digitally print wallpaper. So we were out of eyesight, essentially, from the rest of the industry. So we had time to sort of stuff around and do our thing. We hadn't made this big, bold statement that we're going to change the world tomorrow. And that we were in our 20s. Like, we were both single. So we moved in with mum and dad. We put all our money together. Didn't have any, but we joined forces.
whatever you have.
We're sharing the same baked beans. But yeah, so we were lucky that we were able to just sort of grow on. But as and we sacrificed for the big picture. Like we weren't taking money. Like it took 9 years before we went on the payroll. Like tell someone that who's trying to start a business, say it's going to take a decade. Like tell an employee it's going to be 10 years before you get your first paycheck. They'd be like, don't be ridiculous, I'm out of here. But we were just and if we didn't know that when you started, it's going to take that long before you actually start making income. But we've been sales funded, very slow sales, but we've been sales funded in our growth. So we've just sort of moved along slowly, and you've developed something and you launch it and it sort of pops you up again, and then you cruise along and then you go to the next stage and the next stage. The problem is you then get to your 40s and you've put everything into your business and there's actually nothing in your private bank account, but your business is still going. And that's the thing, we're still cruising along. And people probably look at it and say, oh, they're so lucky to have done that. But we pretty much missed every party in our 30s because we didn't have the money to get to them. Mm-hmm. You know, you sort of lock yourself away to get this thing going. And now it's starting to pay off because we've had the vision to actually see it through. But it's come with a huge amount of sacrifice.
People don't see that. They see the venture-backed,
yeah,
you know, SF tech companies that IPO in 5 years, and people are overnight millionaires, decamillionaires, centimillionaires, billionaires overnight. By, you know, any objective standard, 5 years is a pretty quick time to build a business. But then they get burnt out. And I love the fact that you said it took you 9 years to go on payroll, because I've said this in different ways many times. Like if you commit to anything for 10 years and you find ways to learn from your failures and you iterate through all the problems that you have, you will find a way to become some level of success if you commit 10 years to anything. Like it's very hard to screw it up if you're a smart person, yeah, that keeps exactly learning.
Exactly. It's very, very, like you just got to keep showing up, and that's what it's about. Like you, and I had a landlord in Brisbane at one stage who said, I just do one thing every day. Like in his business life, he just works on the fact that he does one thing every day that actually counts. And as long as you've got that sort of mentality, all right, we're pushing forward all the time, it just sort of starts to build up. And then eventually you get to that 10 years and you look back and you go, wow, like we've come a long way. And it's sort of like my mother's actually, she came for a visit this week. And we were in the office last night, and she hadn't been here before. She hadn't been to the US to check out what we've been doing. So we've had this facility here in Dallas for going on nearly 2 years. And she sort of walks in and she was blown away because she just didn't expect really what we've sort of set up. She just didn't have that in her head. And you think about it, you think, well, it's only been 2 years and it looks like it's been around a whole lot longer than that. But then you think back 10 years and it's, yeah.
Well, because you start to see, you know, you, like if you look on a chart, like you start to see, you'll have this like marginal growth. And then all of a sudden, like when things start working and you start investing more and more into the business, you see that hockey stick growth curve, right? And that's, yeah, where you, that's where you're at after 10, 20 years of doing the business. But that's a beautiful place to be. But people would never, most people would not want to sacrifice 9 years of their life without taking a paycheck.
Oh, no. We were surviving, but we definitely weren't doing it in style. Like it was like, what have you got on this weekend? All right, well, you can have the money this week. You go.
Yeah.
And then I'll stay out.
You're budgeting which events you're going to go to.
Yeah. Like, so yeah, that was that was the thing. Like we did it with essentially with sales funded the whole way through. And that really determined.
It was always profitable speed. Then. It was always profitable.
Well, wouldn't say it was always profitable. There's been some losses in there, but it made sense to keep going. So yeah, and yeah, it's all about, all right, that's our goal. That's where we want to be. What have we got to do to do that? And we've never, Bryce and I've never had the mentality we're going to get rich from one sale or one client or anything like that. Like we've got to put lots and lots and lots together to make this actually work. And that's what we've just been trying to do. So yeah, it's getting better. Like now we have systems in place and we have a really good little team of people that know what they're doing, and we're not doing all the work ourselves. And you know, like I spent a lot of time working night shift doing customer service for the US Now, even telling someone to get out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning to sit in front of a chat, you know, when the live chat comes up, like, yeah, we're there, we're actually talking to you. And I'd be sitting in the dark at home in winter, like with my hoodie on, answering the phone and talking on chats. You know, that's all that. It just takes time and effort to do these things.
When you start to grow, what are the sort of the sales lessons? And let's do sales first, and then let's talk about some marketing stuff as well. Because right now I was looking at some of the numbers that just are your marketing numbers and your growth numbers, and they're actually quite impressive. But we'll talk about things that have worked and things that haven't. But in terms of sales, like just universal sales wisdom, are you going through like retail channels? Are you going through partners, affiliate partners, intermediaries, channel partners? Are you going direct to consumer? I'm sure you've tried all things to some degree. If you were going to say, hey, listen, we're in a niche industry, because I guess you are to a degree, riches are in the niches, and that's really where you're at. How do you take this to market in an effective, in a scalable, in a profitable way? Entrepreneurs want to sort of mimic your strategy. Where would they go?
Well, it's been a bit of a, not a roller coaster, but it's been an evolution. So obviously we started in a really poor market. Let's say a poor market, a small market. Right? The Australian market is really, really small, but yet it's saturated with product. Like you can get anything that you can get pretty much anywhere. Someone will send it to you in Australia for not that much money. So here we are trying to produce locally, and I said, righto, the best way to do it, we need to go to wallpaper shops. We'll design it, we'll manufacture it, and we'll have other people sell it. So off we went. We went and saw the existing shops that have been around for 30, 40 years in Australia. And they'd sort of evolved a little bit to stay in business, but they weren't, booming businesses, but they were in business, right? So we went and saw them, and they're like, we had a couple of allies straight away. I said, we love what you do. You're having a crack at it. Like, let's support you. So we said, right, let's start this way. Let's go wholesale. Let's figure out how to get their price point in there. We've got to compete with the retail price of everything that's being imported. Can we make it happen? So we did. We were in business to a degree. The problem is, it just wasn't enough. So we had had a few shops that were willing to support us, but not enough to, pay us the wage. So we went down that, and we had static websites up. We had our library. We were showing our products, and then we were sending people to these stores. But we just weren't converting. It just wasn't working. And the stores, as much as they wanted to support us, we were one book in a wallpaper shop with 400 books in it. So, and it was a shop that wasn't, going gangbusters. So we were never going to get rich from that concept. It was never going to really work. So like, right, okay. And then after a while, we said, we've really got to put, I had a guy in Japan who sort of found us, and he started selling some products, and it was kind of working. That concept was kind of working for him, but again, not enough. It was expensive to get it there and all sorts of. So then we said, right, we've got to put a shopping cart on this website. We've got to put a retail price point on it and start selling. So we did. That would have been, must have been 11, 12, somewhere around there. And Bryce spent months figuring out how to build an online store, because this was all branding. See, even all
there
these.
No, there was no Shopify. Was there Shopify?
I don't know. We're on Magento. So we built on Magento platform. And we got it up, and then all our wholesale guys were like, oh, you're not supporting us, you're selling it online and all this stuff. We're like, well, we've kind of got to. So as soon as we put it up, we started getting a bit more inquiries from overseas, and most of that inquiry started coming from the US. So we're trying to figure out how to get it to them. And we had this wholesale price point that I'm trying to build into it. So I said, well, we can pay for the international freight with that margin. So let's just give that a go. So it was costing us a fortune to send, because we'd print it on demand in Australia, and then we'd air freight it, express air freight it as fast as we could to whoever wanted to buy it. I hope like hell they didn't want to send it back or it wasn't right or anything. So we started off that way. And then And it started to build a bit more and build a bit more, hence why I ended up on night shift. And I'm just trying to get every sale. Like, we just weren't in a position where we could let someone slip away. So we're answering phones and we're doing that sort of stuff. And we're trying to push the Australian market. And at the time, I had a business coach who said, when we get to this price point, you can go to the US and we'll set up a little office. And we're trying to get to this point. We're like, no, we're never going to get to it unless we go. So in 2016, we had a certain amount of exports to the US. So I said, right, let's go. So we had a little office. My wife, my now wife, Felicity and I, popped on a plane. We had no idea what we were doing. We were going to see if we could do something. So I went to Austin, rented a little Airbnb, and I found this little warehouse, and we set up a little, it was mainly for samples, so we could localize our samples. And then also our customer service. So I'm sitting there on the phone, and I'm sending out samples, and then we had a bit of stock, so we sent some stock over, and we're just trying to get rid of that, bring that cost in. So we did that for 12 months, and we had some growth over those 12 months, but it wasn't booming. We'd figured out this production thing at home where we were using an external printer, and it was fast, but we started having issues with it. So I needed to go home for a bit. So I managed to con the guy that owned the Airbnb I was staying in, had become friends with us. So I said, here's the keys. Can you send samples for a couple of weeks? I'll be back. So Anthony worked for us for 4 years. I didn't come back for 4 years. Luckily, he was available to do it. But he was running our customer service in the US, and we would always kind of, we went home with this, we're going back, but we just didn't get there. We did a heap of stuff at home. Then we got married, had two kids, and then the pandemic hit, and eventually we got back here. So, yeah, we had that for 7 years, this customer service center, and we're shipping product from Australia. Whilst it was expensive, we were just getting better at selling online.
And it's just like, it's wholesale. Like, it's just, you're not going through one broker that's taking you into various retailers in the US. It's like, almost like deal by deal, you're setting these up.
Yeah. It was direct to consumer with we also got a trade side, which is discounted off the retail price point. There was no wholesale because we couldn't get it to a wholesaler at a decent, without actually making any money. So that wasn't an option. So it was like, right, how do we get back there and how do we do it? So we implemented new production technology in Australia, which sort of I'd kind of been against because I thought it was too slow originally. But all right, this concept works and it's consistent, and let's just do the same thing in the US. So it was always our plan, but the technology sort of, there was, you know, a few little hiccups there. So I went, right, let's get over there and let's set it up. So at the start of last year, we moved the little office from Austin. We closed that down, and we had a couple of staff sort of come and go. It wasn't very successful. So we knew we had to get back over here and set it up properly. And by this time, 80% of our sales were US sales. Right. So this was pretty stressful from Australia during COVID, for example, when you just can't get over there and you don't really know what's happening. And anyway, so we had our second daughter, who was born at the start of last year. And when she was 12 weeks old, Felicity and I hopped on an airplane and came back. So it was pretty crazy. So last year's been a pretty busy year. And we set up the factory here, which we've now got, which runs 5 days a week and produces all our US sales out of here.
And now you're... Today's show is brought to you by 1Password. Now listen, we all have that one friend who's constantly forgetting passwords and needing help to get into their accounts. I have a solution. It's called 1Password. 1Password is the award-winning password manager trusted by millions of users and companies like IBM and Slack to keep logins, credit cards, and other private info safe in an encrypted vault that only you can access. No more sticky notes with passwords or using the same password everywhere. I've been using 1Password for a year now, and I can't recommend it enough. It saves me time from having to reset passwords and gives me peace of mind knowing my info is secure. With convenient features like automatic password generation and login autofill, 1Password takes the hassle out of passwords. You can use it on all your devices, iOS, Android, Mac, PC, Everything syncs seamlessly. And with top-notch security audits and encryption, your data stays private. So do yourself a favor and check out 1Password today. Go to 1Password.com/Clary and get a 2-week free trial. Let 1Password remember all of your logins for you so you can remember what really matters. That's 1Password.com/Clary for 2 weeks free. Today's sponsor is BetterHelp. Now, hear me out. If you magically had an extra hour in a day, and I know sometimes that's the only time we get to ourselves, what would you do with it? Maybe you would catch up on sleep. Maybe you'd hit the gym. Maybe you'd finally get into that book that you've been eyeing. We're always wishing for more time. But what if we focused on how we use the time that we have? Think about what really lights you up. What would change in your life if you made that a priority? Do you even know what that thing is? Well, therapy has been a game changer for me, not because of some terrible thing that's happened to me, but because it's helped me figure out what matters, how to manage tough emotions, how to be a better friend, a partner, business person, and just really person all around. So if you're even a little curious about therapy, if you want to help think through what matters to you, what to prioritize, how to live your life, try BetterHelp. It's totally online and works around your crazy schedule. No awkward waiting rooms. Just get matched with a licensed therapist and start making the most of the time you've already got. Learn how to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/successpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/successpod. Set up in the US. So now like full production has shifted to the US, correct?
Yeah. So what that enabled us to do, we took all the US sales out of Australian production. Like Australian production was bursting. We were pretty much running sort of 5-6 a.m. through to 11 p.m. at night. So there wasn't a lot of growth there. Like it's sales, you know, like local people, you know, in Australia, for example, you'd have someone calling, oh, I really want to do something. You go, well, we haven't even got time to sort of jam in there. We're just trying to fill our retail stuff. So by freeing up all of those US sales, we then enabled our Australian business to then say, oh, right, we've actually got some downtime on printers now. Like let's grow our local stuff. So we've actually been lucky. We've seen some good sales growth in Australia as well because we've had the outputs.
You know, when you thought through this problem, how did you think, so now it's worked out, right? It's worked out and now you've sort of lightened the load on the Australian production. So now Australia can grow, US is growing well. What are some of the things that you have to consider when you are moving production to a new country? What are some of the things that even you went through that you probably weren't aware of? Is it difficult to find like the right technology? Do you have to be innovative? Do you have to create your own thing? Like, what are all the different things that you sort of encountered as you've moved production to the US?
Well, that was something that I'd we tried to get right from day one, was get the product right. And by the product, I mean all the processes that go into that product. So when I left in 2017, we went home, we're having these production issues. What had happened? Really early in sort of around 2012, I had this guy who was selling wide format printers, and he said to me in a passing comment, "What you need is an Agfa Doctrix," which was this type of printer. Right, there were very few of them around, but essentially it was this inline fast high speed printer, and I managed to find one. So I was like, "What did he say?" So I wrote it down. I'm Googling the hell out of it. I found one in Australia. There was one in Australia, and I rang the guy who owned it, and I said, I think your printer will print our wallpaper. And I just got him on one of those times where he was looking for more work on it. And so we took our big reel of paper, and we put it on the back of this press, which was printing at around 23 meters per minute. So super fast. And we're watching our paper go through, which was pretty much the last money Bryce and I had, going through. And he's like, I think we can do it. And that kind of kept us in business. We went, right, okay, now we've got a new platform. We're away. This guy can do the printing, set price. We know how much time's involved in production. We can then sort of scale from that. So that was what enabled us to scale to the US originally, was that we didn't have to worry about factory staff and buying our own printers. We just knew for a certain meter price, this guy could print it for us. We provided paper. So towards the end of that relationship lasted for about 5 years, but towards the end of it, we started to get so much paper waste that it just wasn't, we just couldn't do it anymore. So in 2017, we brought printers back in-house, and I went home, we bought this new printer, we put the first one in, we then put the second one in. And that's kind of what happened. So that platform in the Australian factory was like, you stood back at the end of it and went, we're just going to copy this. So that's what we've done here. Essentially, the American footprint is a bit bigger, but everything in here is exactly the same.
So now we're just going through the gamut of things that an entrepreneur has to think about. So obviously, you nailed down sales. You figured out your SOPs, your production, your sort of like your innovation, how you think through expanding to new markets. Let's talk a little bit about how you think through marketing and how you market wallpaper, because wallpaper is not inherently a sexy product that I think that people who are looking for wallpaper in a non-commercial aspect, they actually just trust. They probably go to a showroom or something like that, and there's probably, like you mentioned, hundreds of other competitors out there, and they're just looking for the style that they like the best. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think many people look for like the brand of wallpaper. I think most people are just
No.
looking for, how does this look in
No.
my room, right? So how do
No.
you market this? Is it just having the most is it the most beautiful design, or is there actually a way to build affinity with a wallpaper brand so that the
Well,
customer is
both.
like, I want, yeah, there is a way. Okay, so let's go into that, because that's very interesting. If
Yeah,
you can build
yeah,
affinity
yeah.
with a wallpaper brand, then an entrepreneur can build an affinity with anything they're building.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my
Like, that's the
thesis.
thing. Like, if you know of another wallpaper brand that's not Milton and King, because you're talking to me, have you ever heard of a wallpaper brand?
No, I have not.
See, that's right. So unless you're in the industry, and aware of what's out there, you don't know. You don't know. So, like, you think about if you're trying to style a room, or if you've got this idea, where are you going now? Like, now that technology's sort of caught up. Originally, you were going to a wallpaper shop and you were going to flick through every book and go, oh, yeah, that kind of works with the colors and all sorts of stuff. Well, now you're just going to Pinterest. You go to Pinterest and you're typing in what you want and you've got pages and pages of it just coming in. So essentially, what we've got to do as a brand is finish that look, right? So if you're wanting a certain look, we've got to have designs that finish that room off that people, so not necessarily looking for a black and white wallpaper design. They're looking for a certain style of room or design or decor. And it just happens to have a black and white design that we use. And they go, oh, wow, I really hadn't thought of that. Like, I love how that wallpaper finishes off this room or that gets that design. So that's kind of, we're trying to, finish that lifestyle vision rather than saying, here's a picture. Do you like it? Just put it on the wall. We're sort of showing them that end result.
So what is that actually in how you think through marketing strategy? Like, are you looking at the most viral Pinterest clips, and then that's what informs the design?
Well, no. So what we do, we've got a few methods. We work a lot with, I guess, smaller influencers in the home decor sort of
Okay.
market, who are all going for a different look. Like, if you had endless money, you'd be setting up this studio and you'd be shooting your wallpaper with this style bed and couch. Well, no one's got that. No one's got all of those settings. So you've got to go and find those different settings because we don't have one style of wallpaper. We've got lots and lots and lots of different styles for lots of different projects. Like, we can be in commercial projects, bars and clubs, and then we're in kids' bedrooms and all sorts of stuff. So you've got to look at all of those and go, all right, well, how am I going to incorporate more wallpaper in all of these different projects? So the best way to do it is to really, and we're fortunate too, as you go on, the more people that use it, they want to share it. They want to share their finished project. So we very rarely photograph new ranges. We'll design it and then we send it out to a few of the influencers that we work with and say, what projects have you got at the moment? Oh, I'm doing this for this, whatever. Oh, do you want a couple of rolls? Can you use it in that? And then we get that marketing content back. So that's essentially how we're getting that. And then it was all about driving people to the website. And then showing them what that design looks like, showing them what that in situ or that room setting looks like. And letting them in their minds go, all right, okay, I'm building this concept, this design concept in my head, and that's the product I need to use to help it all sort of come together. Like wallpaper, whilst you don't think about it, is really good bang for your buck. You know, like right at the end, you can completely transform a room with a different, you know, wallpaper on the wall. So, you know, we're sort of fortunate that we can have that impact with our product.
No, but I love the way that you think through marketing, because I think that's very smart, like with the influencer marketing. I mean, as a company, I think you're a good, I mean, I have not researched every single wallpaper company and how they market their products or services, but I mean, you're out there. So you have a beautiful website, you're working with influencers. I think you also collaborate with some artists, which I'm actually very curious about. You have a podcast, like you do, you have PR, you have like everything. You're doing all the marketing things, which I think for myself, these are all very normal marketing things, and maybe other people that are very forward-looking marketers. But I look at some industries. I don't know if wallpaper's like this, but I know there's a lot of industries in like in the home, in like development and home and architecture, and they have like a website. They're not working with influencers. Some are, obviously, but I think that a lot of people just think in legacy industries, they don't have to do as much. To attract a customer. And I think that that's probably the wrong way to think about it, because they've gotten too comfortable with their showroom, or they've gotten too comfortable with their Rolodex of clients that they've had for the past 50 years, whatever it is. And now disruptive, innovative companies that know how to market, that know how to tap into influencers, audiences, and know how to basically communicate with the people that are actually going to be buying their product in the ways that they like to be communicated to. Because I don't like going to a showroom and driving. I don't want to. I never want to go out of my house if I don't have to. So it's like, how do I bring my brand to the consumer wherever they like to consume content and wherever they like to experience new things? And how do I get into their brain that way? And I think that's what you're doing exceptionally well.
Well, but we've kind of been forced to do it. And by that, I mean, like, when we were looking at how do we break into this market, like we've come into a market that essentially is hundreds of years old. And your big players have, we've looked at it and said, all right, what have we got to do here to be able to essentially have our product on par with these big guys who have been around forever? Like, how do we do that in the market? So, well, we're going to start by doing things a little differently. We're going to print everything on demand. Right? So traditionally, a wallpaper factory has used big analog machines. They set them up and they run out 100, 200,000 rolls of the same product, right? So the whole design concept, the designers design it 1 year, then it finally gets passed and they decide, all right, we've got the budget to put these 12 designs into a new collection. We're going to hit production and we're going to produce this much. Then we're going to warehouse it. And then we're going to tell everybody how good it is. And then we're going to jam it down their throats until we don't have any in the warehouse anymore. So that's essentially how it's worked. And the way that it worked is we've got this big factory here, and then we've got our market here locally, whether it be shops, but there's probably a step in between where you've got distributors, and then you've got your international distributors so that you can actually have that reach. And then you've got shops. So you're taking product that was worth, let's say, $20, and we've eventually got it into the market at our $100 price point. Well, we didn't have a hope in hell of competing with this $20 price. Right, so we couldn't use that platform. That wasn't an option. We had to figure out, all right, how are we going to get it on par at $100, but we don't want to carry any stock. We're going to use digital printers, and when an order comes in, we're going to ship it directly to them. The advantage that did give us was that we could launch collections without the huge investment. There wasn't an investment of time to decide which ones to do. There wasn't a culling of, oh, that color doesn't work. I don't want to do 100 rolls of that. We could just throw a design up and it didn't matter if no one bought it, because it hasn't cost us anything apart from that original design. So that's kind of enabled us to have this bigger library, because we haven't got these huge setup fees. So we're like, all right, well, we don't have this huge distribution market. So how are we going to sell it? Like, how are we going to get it in front of people? And that's when it's like, all right, well, we need to figure out how to get people to our website. How are we going to do that? We're kind of working backwards. In terms of now, because we've started with e-commerce and now we're starting to fill the holes backwards to wholesale, because as we grow internationally, we have, you know, we've got another factory coming on in the Netherlands next month. So we'll be able to produce a design, market it globally into all markets at a decent price point, like at a fair price point across the board, and then fill those orders locally. So there's no international freight, there's no delays, there's still no stock. And so we're then able to fill backwards and say, all right, well, we can work with this showroom and we can work with a wholesale market, hence the custom swatch books we're about to release. So by getting rid of that international freight cost, we've been able to say, all right, we can put that step back in. Where if you're a traditional guy and you've been selling through distributors and showrooms and shops and all that, and you want to go direct to consumer with that brand that you've spent 100 years building, that's very hard to do without pissing off everybody at the bottom overnight, right? You can essentially kill your business very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So that's, and what's happened is they've also had resellers who've been innovative and entrepreneurial and said, oh, well, I buy this wholesale, I'll just throw 20% on and I'll sell it online. So then they've got these brands that essentially aren't selling online direct, but they've got resellers selling their product online for them. And now they've got to somehow claw it back and get control of what's actually out there and the price points. And like these guys are all, essentially it's a race to the bottom with the product. It's, you know, it's like
everybody's it sounds like it's an industry that is like ripe for disruption.
Yeah, and it is happening because technology is enabled.
Yeah.
Whilst it didn't enable us to go and find an off-the-shelf solution, you could come into it now with a few dollars, you could go and do that. You could find an off-the-shelf solution. So it's also putting a bit more pressure on these big guys. And I like to look at what they're doing and how they're doing and how they're evolving. Like there's been a couple of standouts that have seen online and the way that we market in terms of our, whether it be ads and Facebook ads, things like that. There's been a few of those guys who've adapted really, really early. And I would say that they're miles in front of that than the competition in that regard. But yeah, it is, there's a lot of old industries that would be exactly the same as that. Yeah. So yeah, it's the challenge, but we've been fortunate that we've been sort of,
You're set up perfectly. Kind of, I think you're set up perfectly.
Yeah, at the moment, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, then there will be some other new. There will be some new company that will eventually try and dethrone you. But that's where I think, as you grow, you can't lose that edge, that innovative entrepreneurial spirit. That's very important too.
Yeah. So we've looked at that and said, all right, well, we're setting up our little satellite factories, right? And we know the concept, we can design it and we can put it together. We've got a bulletproof product that's the same world over. How do we grow on that? Like there's lots of little brands and interior designers and surface designers and homeware companies and all sorts of people that want to put their designs onto a wallpaper product. Mm-hmm. And then how do I do this? Essentially, you'd go to one of the big producers and you do a contract range and they produce, you know, however much and set it all up and you carry stock and that's how you do it. But there are now, you can go to digital guys like us who will help you launch a range and then do it all on demand, right? There's only a few, but they're doing it quite successfully. We're looking at it and saying, all right, well, maybe we should offer those services. So we're actually about to also release what we're calling M&K Enterprise, which is going to give you, so you're a designer, you can come to us, set up your designs in our system, and then you can go out and market to someone in Germany, someone in France to sell your product, and you can actually have it made in Europe, shipped locally. So you all of a sudden, you as a small individual brand could be competing internationally with the big boys with your market because you've partnered with someone like us.
So you're turning it into a little bit of a tech platform too.
Yeah, trying to.
Very smart.
Because like we've had to think internationally from day one because of our market we were in. But if you're in the US and I listen to e-commerce podcasts and stuff, and I have done for years, and you listen to these guys talk, well, they haven't really, in most cases, you don't need to think outside the US. Mm-hmm. Like you think Canada, you think, too hard, you know, for what it's worth, because you've got this huge market here. You'd be very successful within the US market. But we've always had to think internationally. So you've got to think sales. Like I've got accountants in every location. because you've got to be compliant everywhere. So you're sort of thinking, all right, we start here, and then what do we need to do in the US? You've got all that sales tax side, so we've got, you cover all that. And then you go into Europe, you're covering what duties do I have to pay if I ship that in? What can I get around if I produce it locally? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be right for VAT? What's my rules and regulations around that? So we're trying to cover those bases because we already have, for the person coming in to say, oh, these guys can actually cover me on that, and they can ship it locally and don't have to even worry about it. So that's what we're in the middle of sort of growing, yeah, which is exciting.
Very, very smart. What, out of all the activities that you're taking on, I mean, this is just sort of like the innovation expansion of your business. You're building a platform for people and designers that want to actually launch their own brands, which I think is fabulous. I absolutely love this. I did not know you were doing this. Out of all the different marketing activities that you've sort of engaged in, what is the highest return? What is the 20% of activities that yields the 80% of the results in terms of your marketing? Because there is influencers, there is PR, there is paid. There's like, what is the thing that you think has helped you the most?
It's kind of hard because they all work very, very well together. Like, okay, you know, you've got to have that top of funnel. You've got to be showing people what's out there, right? And you spend a lot of money doing that, putting, you know, stuff in front of people, whether it be Facebook ad or whatever. Mm-hmm. You look at the return on that and you go, it doesn't return as well as a Google ad or whatever it might be, or Pinterest, right? Like Pinterest, we've got a huge following on Pinterest, or we get in front of a lot of people on Pinterest. But, you know, wallpaper is a slow burn. Like it takes, you can see wallpaper, you can see a room that you like, but it might be 12 months before you're buying anything. So it doesn't happen quickly. It's not like a little gizmo that you go, oh, I've got to have it, boom, click it, and it's here the next day. Like this is, you've got to design everything else, or you've got to wait for the builder, or you've, whatever it might be. The project takes a long time. So you look at it and you think, which is my best bang for my buck when you're looking at your return? I don't know, it's hard because it all sort of melts. It sort of has to work together.
They do. And if you take one piece out, then the other pieces aren't going to function at the same level. They're not going to be as effective.
Yeah. But essentially, we're a retail. We're a direct-to-consumer. Like most of our sales, 70% of our sales come from retail. But in saying that, our trade market is growing a hell of a lot too, because you've also got people who are now aware of your wallpaper brand. You've actually seen the Milton and King logo, and they're going to their interior designer, or they're walking into a shop and saying, oh, do you have this from Milton and King? And if the shop hasn't heard of us, they're like, who? Like, how do I get it?
And that's so powerful too. That's so powerful when somebody comes in and asks about a brand.
That's right. It's not us trying to convince them that they've already got a buyer. So we're sort of seeing all markets kind of, you know, come along with it. It's positive. But we're controlling our online. So back to your, what are you doing with affiliates? That's something where they're looking at, like, what's the big thing for us walking into a wallpaper shop? They go, do you sell online? Who else sells online? Can I sell online? And we're like, well, hang on. We're trying to control what is out there. So we control the website. We control what's sold online. And then we're looking, all right, well, how do we support the shops? What do we do our best there so that they haven't got to run their own website? They can actually generate income from our site. Like, how can they send people? So we're looking at that. We're looking at the affiliate program, how we you know, reward those guys who are using our website rather than trying to compete with us.
I have a couple like just general entrepreneur questions and insights that I want to pull out of you. But before I pivot, is there anything, last words of wisdom on anything you've built, on wallpaper, on the strategy you're deploying right now, on just learnings? I mean, we've gone through a lot. So was there anything we didn't go into that we should have gone into?
Probably. No. I think we're just rambling along.
No, I love it because it's all relevant. And I want to just, there's like some sort of like some best practices for entrepreneurship. And I want to just ask, but that's where I wanted to go next. But I'm just trying to think if there's anything else about the business tactically that we didn't go into right now that would be good.
I think generally we've sort of covered a fair bit of that with our chat. Okay. But in terms of words of wisdom, I don't really know if I have too much wisdom. But I guess the thing for us, the reason we're still in business is that we've just kept showing up and we've kept doing it. But we've also put ourselves, we started off in a position where we could do that. Like, we didn't have mortgages, we didn't have kids that were hungry, we didn't have any of those things where it was really, really dependent on us or a return from day one. Like, so, but yeah, I think the main thing for any entrepreneur or anyone in business is just to keep going. If it's working. If it's not working, you've got to make pretty drastic decisions. But if it's working, and you've got to stop and look, everybody's race is completely different. You can't look at these guys and go, oh, they're killing it. Like, we've got to get into that. Well, hang on. That's not what we do. That's what he's doing. So, yeah, you've just got to find a little niche and get good at it. And that's the challenge. Just get good at what you're doing.
You started this business with your brother. What advice would you give entrepreneurs that go into business with their family?
I think it's been, we've been lucky because we're fairly close, but we're also both, you know, it's very different when you're both single, because you can deal with each other. But then when, like now we're both married, we've both got children, and we did that through different stages of the business. You know, like Bryce was married first and his kids are a bit older. So you can see he went through a part where he was, you know, he had kids. So he didn't want to sit at the office like I did all the time. He didn't want to, you know, he had other obligations. So I guess the big thing is you've got to be aware that life is going on outside it, and it's not one or the other. You've really got to figure out how to blend it all together and actually live with it blended together. And as much as I think you want to say leave that at work, it's very hard to do that. And so, you know, being brothers, we're probably not the best communicators. We are, you know, we go through and we know a lot of what each other's sort of thinking and where they're at. But I'll get off the phone and my wife will say, oh, did you ask him about that? Or, no, like, it didn't come up, you know what I mean? So he'll be right, like, you don't need to know. So it's interesting, and especially as you go into multiple countries. Like Bryce works in Australia, so we talk at the end of the day, his start of the day. And usually we sort of have that, like my drive home, I'm on the phone to Bryce, and you sort of get to the driveway, you're sort of rounding things up because you want to get inside. So, we tick off what we've got to tick off, but our communication could always be better. And that doesn't matter who your partner is, you need to have better communication.
Obviously, you mentioned, you know, balance between your work and your life is very important. Integration is almost required because it's very difficult, especially as a founder, CEO, to leave stuff at home or leave work at work, at the office. How has your approach changed to what you give your work and how much you work and balancing now your family, your children? You've evolved as a person, as a business leader. Maybe just walk us through what an entrepreneur who currently is building something, maybe single, no kids, how they should evolve and mature based on your experience.
Well, I think there's always, like when you're starting something, there's no doubt about it. It takes hours of work. Like you've just got to get in and you've got to grind. It's not going to build itself. It's deciding at what point you can let other people do some jobs. You know, you've got to let other people and you've got to get a team in with you as well. But as a founder, like, you know, this is the old, you've got to work on your business, not in it. Now, you've always got to start in it and you've got to be doing it. Like I used to run the printer, I used to run the chats and answer the phones. And look, like someone's got to do it. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you get to that point where you can put other people in there, you can't micromanage them. You've got to tell them what to do, what your expectations are, and let them run with it. And I think we wouldn't be in a position where we're able to grow and actually plan ahead if we were trying to do that. You'd still be in torn by making sure every role was perfect. So I think, and as you evolve from that, you don't have to be at work all the time. You can be walking along, you know, with your kids somewhere else, but you're still thinking about it. You're still thinking about what you've got to do. Like it's always in your head, oh, I've got that next step, I've got to do that, which takes a bit of time. And then you can say, I know I've got 3 hours of work I've really got to knuckle in and do, but you can sort of bank it up a bit more and it sort of just starts to blend together a little bit more. Yeah.
What would be your, you know, on that note, what would be your tips for finding the people that you can trust and you can let them run with different tasks You have to hire the most incredible people. You have to trust them. You have to let them go do what they're best at. How do you find these people? How do you attract them? How do you retain them? How do you make sure they're the right fit?
Well, I've always been, I'm not necessarily one that, because we didn't start with an idea of producing more paper. Like, we grew into the role that we're in now. So I think as long as they, like, when I look at people who are joining our team, I don't really care about what they've done in the past. I do to a degree, but I care about what they actually want to do moving forward. And are they going to be right for our team? Are they going to fit in with our team? Because we're only a really small team. We take responsibility and we do our roles. If there's a stuff up, we own up to them. We need hard workers, not people that are just, oh yeah, I'm the head salesman type thing. So we've got all these sort of different backgrounds that kind of come together in our people, and it all works quite well as a team. So when I'm looking at people, I really look at how are you going to fit in with our team and where are you at? Like, do you want something to get into? Because, like, you start off, you need the money, right? When Bryce and I started flat broke, we just needed some money. And then you sort of start and you think, oh, there's something in this. And then the innovating side comes along and you go, well, it's not really about the money. It's about whether or not I can fix this, you know, certain thing. And then it goes to the next thing, and it's, and you kind of, because you're growing as a person and you're getting out of bed for a reason, not just to make a dollar, but you're getting out of bed because it's something that you actually want to do. You got to find the people that want to be like that, that actually don't find work a pain. You know, you got to find those people that are happy for Monday mornings. So that's kind of what I just kind of try and find those people that are just really willing to crack into that next thing and want to be involved.
I love that. Yeah. Happy for Monday mornings. I like that. It's so important, though. It's very important. If you were going to look back and tell your 20-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
I don't know because I think everything that, like, and I, in my 20s, I know I chopped, like, I started off in my 20s, I was driving a tractor, you know. I was working on a cotton farm and up and down all day. And I remember I had a tape cassette stuck in the bloody thing. It was Sting on repeat and I couldn't get it out of the thing. You know, like, it's telling a 20-year-old that, like, that was before iPads and iPhones and things like that, Bluetooth. So I think all of those steps involved, like driving a tractor, going off and study accounting. Like, I went to study accounting never to be an accountant. That was never my aim. I was only there to figure out bookkeeping, essentially, because I thought it was, yeah, this is a good step. I'm going to use this one day. I need to be able to understand financials. Everybody else in the class wanted a job. Boring. Like, so, and then I went off to the UK and I met all these people in the UK and I was cleaning cars in the UK. And then I had this, I worked with this group of guys who were South African and Kiwis. And I caught up with one a couple of weeks ago who used to be my old boss from 20 years ago. And so I was kind of, all those things that you do all end up coming out later on. Like,
yeah.
So I don't think I'd change anything because I wouldn't be here now in this position, you know. And if I had made the change, I'd be doing something completely different. So I don't really tend to look back and go, I wish I'd done that, because that would have changed all the outcomes.
Yeah, I like that answer a lot, actually. That's very smart. It's very wise. It is, like, life is just this aggregation of all your learned experiences that end up, that let you do what you do and let you end up where you're supposed to end up. I like that a lot. If you could, you know, look back and now you see you've had this incredible career, you've built an incredible business. This question will be two parts, but the first part would be, what does success mean for you in terms of your business? Like, where is success in terms of where you can take it? Do you have a goal, a vision for where you actually build this? And then also, more importantly, though, where is success in your own life? What does success mean to you now, again, that you have built a business that you can take a little bit of a step back? You're still obviously highly operational, but what is a personal success metric in your life? So business, personal success.
Well, business, I think, like, I look at where we are now and I essentially think we're starting. Like, all the work we've done in the past has got us to this point where we're actually competing in the market. We're definitely not a major player. We're definitely not, you know.
I would say you're not a major player. You're innovative. Yeah.
But we're not, and that's the Australian talking down. But I think we're in this position where we're ready. We're right to go. Like, we've figured it all out. We can go. Let's crack in. And we've also figured out how to expand ourselves quite easily into new markets. You know, we know what's required to, let's say we want to get into Spain, for example. We know what's going to be required to get into Spain. We know we can deliver product at a decent point. We've already got the website. We've already got the business. So I look at that and think, we've done this bit. We're at the starting line, right? And we can then just start rolling it out. I don't know where it goes. I don't know what it ends up looking like. I want to master wall coverings before I try and master anything else. Like,
smart. Very smart.
You know, and really have that. If you think of wall coverings, you think Milton and King. I really want to have that covered first. In terms of what does it look like, I don't know. Maybe I'm not so active. Maybe Bryce isn't so active, and we can actually have a decent size holiday and not have to pay wages on a Wednesday and all those type things. But that'll come in time. That'll come in time. So it's just about getting that team a bit bigger and a bit better, and putting ourselves in a position where we're not as required day to day. But my personal life, I think, like, we've got two young kids, 4 and 2, on the other side of the world without any support. Well, I wouldn't say without any support, without any family close by. And so it'd be nice to be able to sort of close that up and continue doing what we're doing and enable our family to have this adventure. Like, and I think there's a whole lot more adventure to be had. But I'd also like to be able to and from Australia a bit more and still have those relationships with grandparents and cousins and all those type things, but also be able to give our daughters the opportunity to understand that the world isn't that big and scary that, you know, let up on a plane. That's kind of where we're at.
I love this. Okay, so if people want to connect with you, a couple things. First of all, you do have a podcast too. So
yeah.
I was looking at some of the episodes. You're speaking with a whole bunch of creatives, designers, artists, some influencers. So there's a lot of, like, please go listen to the podcast, because it's not just a wallpaper podcast. There's a lot of really incredible people that are on this. And I was listening to a few of them and I really actually quite liked it. And the music at the beginning is very calming and soothing. So hats off to whoever produces this.
No, that's Chris. Chris has been with us for six or seven years.
He's the one who interviewed you. Is that?
Yeah. So
it is a very nice podcast.
Yeah, he actually had a music background, and he met Haley, who also works for us, and they now live in LA. But Chris has got we're big ones on plenty of strengths, right? The whole team. This is one of Chris's strengths. Like, he's got those soothing tones.
Yeah, it's a very well done podcast. Like, I'm not just blowing smoke. Like,
and this is his first one, so
it's very good. I promise I won't try and steal him. But outside of that, where should people go to connect with you? I mean, you have MiltonKing.com for the website.
Yeah.
But what are your personal socials? Do you Twitter, LinkedIn, where are you at?
I'm on LinkedIn. I don't use Instagram. Company uses Instagram. Yeah. I've got a big, you know, that's a good way to get product out there and tell people what we're doing. I'm a bit hopeless on it. So, but the big one is obviously the website. Get on the website and then follow everything from there.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, but then me personally, I'm just rocking a bit of LinkedIn action. That's about it.
Sounds good. No, I appreciate it. Okay, Richard, I really appreciate what you've built here. I appreciate the innovation that you've brought to this industry. So I want to just thank you for jumping on, but also thank you for sort of teaching entrepreneurs, in my opinion, how to disrupt something that's been around for hundreds of years. And there's going to be a lot of industries and a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of legacy industries that can learn from you. And probably there will be some business leaders who have family businesses that go back generations that should also learn from you, so they don't get disrupted by another you in another legacy industry. That's my takeaway.
That's fair enough. Don't tell too many people with big, deep pockets, though. They might come in as competition. So.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Stay out of wallpaper, but any other legacy industry, you can go disrupt it.
Yeah.
Anyways, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much for your time. It's been good.
No, my pleasure.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time, from an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.